Hi, everybody, and welcome to this special edition of the Smart PR Inner Circle. I originally conceived it as a bonus webinar for my Inner Circle members. We just had our regular March one last week, and that seems like a year ago. So I knew I needed to get some updated information out to help them get through the coming economic crisis. And as I thought about it, because we're all in this together, I wanted to make this available to as many PR pros as needed it. So I opened it up to everyone, and I'm proud of my Inner Circle members who hailed that approach and are happy and generous about sharing it with the rest of you. Speaking of difficult circumstances, I just got done doing the live version of this webinar. About 500 hearty souls stuck with me as during the sound checks, the sound was great. And then once we hit the top of the hour, everything got staticky. They couldn't hear me. They stuck it out. The sound came back. We went through. We were getting near the end. And then at the top of the next hour, the sound went out again. But rather than using that spotty recording and posting that for all of you, I'm re-recording this right now back-to-back to the live one so we can get you a clean recording as soon as possible. Now, we're definitely going to deliver what you were promised. That is what the media will need in the coming weeks, the opportunities that can emerge in this economic turmoil, and specific recommendations that you can start to apply right away today, tomorrow, next week that are going to help you stay ahead. But first, I want to share some foundational perspectives. They helped me after yesterday. I found myself jumping up from this chair and running to stand in that doorway right there while the building shook. Yes, I'm here south of Salt Lake City, and we had the largest earthquake in 30 years. While I was standing over there and it was shaking, I was like, what? Are you serious? On top of everything that's going on, I'm like looking out my window, wondering if I'm going to see a swarm of locusts coming next. And seriously, as I came back and sat down in this chair where I'd been preparing for the webinar, I was like, what's the point? You know, what if there's an aftershock, it knocks out the power. I will never do this webinar. I can't control the global economy. What good is it to try? So if you've been having feelings of unsettledness, even aimlessness, know that you're not the only one on this call that's feeling that way. And that's a direct consequence of these types of crises. I want to share with you now the two foundational perspectives that helped me reground myself to be able to get back to work, to be in a position to hopefully provide as much value as I can to you today. And then you can apply these to provide as much value to the people in your sphere of influence going forward. Let me turn off the webcam and you can see better. The first foundational perspective I want to share with you is that things will be better someday. When I was rattled by that earthquake yesterday, my mind raced to all the worst case scenarios about how are we going to have earthquake shelters when we can't be in groups of bigger than 10 people? Where are they going to put all the injured from the earthquake when the hospitals are blocked off for COVID-19 patients? It's natural to worry like that. Fortunately, gratefully, the earthquake only caused minimal damage. Our airport was shut down and there were a few minor injuries, thankfully no deaths or serious destruction. And that's generally how life is. Things are going to be very tough for a long time right now. I'm not trying to sugarcoat that, but it's not going to be as bad as our worst case scenario when our mind starts spiraling and our imagination takes off. Here's an experience that I think of to help me remember that. This is Jim and Roma Sabine. They're my wife's grandparents. May they rest in peace. This is a photo taken as I remember them after we were married and before their deaths in the mid-2000s. Jim here graduated from college as the valedictorian of his class. He and Roma were engaged and he went off to Harvard Law School. During his second year of law school in February, he saved up his money so he could call Roma on the phone for Valentine's Day. And while they were talking, she listed for him the local banks that had failed through the effects of the Great Depression. Of course, as it turns out, one of those banks was where Jim and his family had saved all their money. He had no choice but to get on a train and come home. Had no money to continue his education. Couldn't find a job in the Salt Lake City area and heard about one in the Bay Area. So the next day, he got on a train, went out to the Bay Area, landed that job, worked as hard as he could, saved up money to get married to Roma. He had a three-day weekend, so he got on the train on a Friday night, came home. They got married, had a one-day honeymoon on that Monday off, and he was back at work on Tuesday. Continued saving, was able to go to law school at UC Berkeley's Bolt Hall, and then went on to a long and successful legal career, culminating as an assistant state attorney general for the state of California under Earl Warren. He retired and taught at a law school and traveled the world with Roma, the parents of three daughters, grandparents of a bunch of wonderful grandkids, one of whom I'm privileged to be married to. And when they passed away, they had lived wonderful, rich, full lives. That type of perspective is going to help us get through the difficulty we're enduring. I've had my own disruptions in 2001 and 2008, like most of you. They weren't near as tough as Jim's, but to us, they were plenty anguishing at the time. And I'm not saying, again, this crisis will soon pass. I'm not saying it'll be easy. It's okay to recognize that we're having an emotional disruption. We're coming off a period of prosperity unprecedented in world history. It's natural and appropriate to grieve the loss of the future that you were hoping for. But remember, the future that you'll actually end up having is most likely going to be better than the one that you're imagining right now. Another foundational perspective that helps to stop the spiraling negative mindset when you're stressed is to focus on specific things in your control. The Inner Circle has always been about empowering you, the individual PR pro. So I'm speaking today to you as a person, not a brand or not as the brand or the nonprofit you work for. I'm going to continue to help you preserve your ability to be financially self-reliant, doing the work and the skills that you were born to apply. So when you think about focusing on what's specifically in your direct control, that puts aside all the uncertainty and brings you a sense of purpose. As I thought about this, I realized that someday, I hope somebody asked me, Grandpa, what did you do during COVID-19 or whatever they're calling it in 50 years? As I look back, from that point, I want to be able to say what I accomplished. So right now I'm setting goals that when this is over, whether that's 3 months or a year or even longer, I'm going to be able to assuredly say I accomplished these things. Now, I have other goals, things that are outside of my control about my business and the help that I can provide PR pros, but those rely on the choices of others, so they're not totally within my control. Just for this exercise, stay with me as I focus on things I can control. The first one is I'm going to learn how to use LinkedIn to strengthen thought leadership. Up to now, email, blogging, and Twitter have worked great for me. I had more business than I can handle. That's probably not going to be the case, so I'm going to use some of that time to learn how to use LinkedIn better. I'm also going to apply mindfulness to my life and work to a greater degree, and by mindfulness, I mean meditation. I'm going to have more frequent, longer, and more effective periods of meditation. It's helped me so far, and I want it to help more. I also set a goal that I know I can control. This isn't in everyone's control, but for me, I know I can lose 10 pounds. That's my ideal weight. I've been there before. I know what it takes to get back there. Just got to make some choices and some discipline and stop eating all these snacks that I have a lot more access to working from home. And then finally, my goal that I can control is write down every week what I've learned about gratitude, humility, and charity. I respect everybody on this call's worldview and their perspectives and philosophy. Mine as a person of faith is that we go through trials and adversity like this in part to help us learn these important attributes that bring us maybe not happiness, but joy and peace no matter what our circumstances are. So I definitely want to come out of this with more lessons learned about these attributes. There's plenty more I definitely hope to accomplish, things regarding my kids and how they come through it, but I can't control my kids' choices, even if I stand over them and try to get them to do their online school. I can certainly seek to influence them, and I'm going to try my best, but in this section, we're talking about focusing mightily on only what we can control. So I encourage you, after you're done watching this, set three specific goals for yourself that are directly within your control. Now, as important as it is to focus at times on things within your control, It'd be dangerous to focus on yourself all the time. Instead, make sure that you resist the urge to stay protected in your cocoon, watching Netflix or reading the news. Resist the instinct to withdraw and wait for this to blow over. Instead, look for ways you can serve others. Don't sit and wait. Go create. This is important both for your own morality and, just as importantly, for your economic success. It's important to not sink back or withdraw. You can choose. The way you're going to grow, both personally and professionally, is to wake up every day and ask yourself, what can I do today to provide more value to more people than I did yesterday? Then go do that. That's the philosophy that prompted me to set up this webinar. It took some guts just in the middle of a crisis to say, hey, I'm going to set up a webinar and go to webinar and offer people tips on how to endure it. But it made me feel a lot better to have an outlet for the nervous energy that I was feeling. No matter what the stock market does, no matter what politicians do, I'm going to keep finding ways to add more value for you this week than I did last week. When you choose to act this way, your circle of influence grows and the value you send out finds its way back to you. But that's not even the most important outcome. What really matters is how you change inside. There's a serenity that comes from proving to yourself that external factors never dictate your life and your potential. Nothing a news anchor reports has more power over your life than the choices you make every day. Through the rest of the webinar, I'm going to show you choices you can make that will mitigate losses to your earning power and even strengthen it in some cases as you wake up every day and ask, how can I add more value to more people today? So there you go with the two foundational principles, and now let's dive into what the media need. Now, it's important to not be distracted by a lot of the negativity that's out there. And I shouldn't say negativity, I should say realism, okay? It's real. Demand has tanked in many industries. If you're in travel, hospitality, retail, there's virtually nothing you can do for the time being to goose demand in your industry. But don't let that distract you from the fact that there's another industry where demand is greater than ever. No, not just virtual meetings, but the demand for content has never been greater. Publishers are dealing with an insatiable demand for more and better content. Yes, we need to be sensitive to timing when we reach out to the media and to audience about promoting our work, but it's more about who you're targeting than what you're sharing. If you're pitching a journalist who's up to their eyeballs in sick people, something about fabric softener, yeah, they're going to be mad right now. But there are other journalists, bloggers, and audiences who need to have some distraction and news they can use in regular facets of life. You've probably seen tweets about reporters complaining about getting pitched stuff that was irrelevant to COVID-19. And those can have a overgeneralization effect where people throw the baby out with the bathwater and don't pitch anything. Instead, be nuanced, be sensitive to that timing, but recognize that people, audiences are interested in more than just the crisis news. When I was putting this together a couple days ago, I was on Twitter and I noticed that the trending topics were St. Patrick's Day, two NFL free agency pieces of news, and then one that was generally applied to the aftermath of the crisis. It wasn't all COVID-19 all the time. And you won't see these as often as the whiny journalist tweets, but there is a tweet from an editor at a big paper in the UK who says, hey, PR friends, we can't write a whole paper about coronavirus and we don't want to. We need your non-CV themed stories more than ever. They're out there even if they're not tweeting it. Think about how you long for news information and content to distract you from what's going on. I keep refreshing my favorite sports site, hoping for something that can take my mind off what we're dealing with. They're not the only ones getting a burst of demand while they're typical sources of content have dried up. My wife happens to run a popular sewing blog, and watch what her traffic did. This is Saturday the 14th, as people realized it was pretty much Thursday that everything blew up and all the orders to practice social distancing took off, at least here in the States. And you can see that the demand for her information, which is like the comfort food of the web, hobbies and crafts and other lifestyle stuff, peaked around Saturday. And I anticipate that's going to continue. She had over a 50% increase in her unique visitors. Okay, so like I said, you'll be sensitive to the timing. If you're pitching somebody really targeted or niche, like a blogger or a B2B vertical, it's okay to go out with some stuff. You're going to acknowledge the crisis that their readers are and viewers are experiencing, but give them those audiences some useful information, whether it's useful in terms of distraction or in how your product or service or issue can help them deal with the crisis and its aftermath. Here's some additional timing you can watch for to indicate when the media will return more to business as usual. And that's when the number of new cases starts to drop. So I'm not saying you can't have new cases. I'm just saying when it peaks. So fortunately, in my market, we're dealing with only about 10 or 11 new cases a day. That'll probably continue to rise for until we get to about 2 weeks after all the restrictions. And then when it starts to drop from 100 a day to 90 a day, even though that's still high, that's when people in my key market are going to start to expand what they're looking for a little bit closer to business as usual. Nationally, we all need to keep our eye on New York City. That's where most national journalists are headquartered. And so their perspectives are understandably going to be skewed by the level of crisis they are feeling. And that's going to extend longer than most of the nation, unfortunately, because of the outbreak that started in New Rochelle, the suburb of New York. They're going to be having a hospital ship in New York Harbor. They're going to probably be seeing Army field hospitals set up in parks. And until that starts to abate, that sense of urgent crisis starts to abate, they'll be pretty distracted by that stuff. And then the third indicator is the overall number of cases starting to drop, the number of new cases starting to drop in the U.S. or your home country, wherever you're listening to this from. That's when things will move slightly toward business as usual. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying there'll be an immediate reversion back to where we were. That's going to take a long time. Something else to keep in mind, we don't see a lot of discussion about this. I understand why, but there's going to be two curves. This is one of those graphs, and don't pay much attention to the way it's labeled in terms of the numbers. What we're seeing is the bump, right, in infections that is inevitable. And look at that's not scheduled to really peak until later this spring. Of course, that's in the do-nothing scenario. But there's definitely going to be a bump here. And then afterwards, once all these social distancing approaches start to take hold, it'll drop. But I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but it's going to go back up again. Whether the governments relax the restrictions, or even if they don't, people are just going to be saying, the number of new infections is dropped. And particularly younger folks under 30 are going to be like, I'm not going to get that sick anyway. They're going to start going out and they're going to start spreading it again. And we're going to be back here again, probably in the fall. So that's just something to keep in mind. Another good reason not to wait for this first bump to be over, because you'll be waiting a long time if that's the strategy. Okay, so now let's talk about opportunities that are going to emerge through economic turmoil, not just with the media. This is targeted to you and your business, and how to preserve your earning power going forward. I want to pull from a memory I have in the thrust of the 2008 recession. You might remember when we had the banks failing, Lehman Brothers failed. All of a sudden, Fannie Mae got taken over by the government. There were a few days there, even. It came down to a few days where the whole U.S. economy was hanging in the balance. Hank Paulson, who was the Treasury Secretary at the time, has since written in his memoir that he was on a conference call getting this news, and he went into the restroom off of his office and vomited. He was so freaked out. I remember reading a memo from a big investor. It was hard copy that he'd sent to his closer associates during that time. I got a hold of it through my brother-in-law, who's in finance. And he was being real, but he also was reminding everyone about the opportunities that recessions provide. He cited our minds back to the recession of 2001, the tech bust, and guess what company was founded then? Yeah, it was Google. Larry Page and Sergey Brin had a great product, and they, although there was less overall capital available from investors, there was a lot less competition for that capital. Very few startups at that time. So they were able to get the attention they needed to show off their great product, get the capital to get it started. Likewise, advertising and marketing costs were a lot lower because there was very little competition or demand for that. So prices were lower. So the advice that this investor had that he shared in this memo, I followed it. And it's amazing how much, how deeply ingrained advice gets in you when you follow it. So this is not just me repeating advice that others have found, but I read it back then in a situation kind of like this one. I applied it and it worked. And that's why I'm commending it to you today. In times of economic turmoil, don't focus on growing your revenue or salary, and don't freak out too much even about it dropping, but instead focus on growing your market share or mind share. So if you're an employee, you know, and you're thinking in terms of salary rather than revenue, you aren't going to be able to really increase your market share, but you can the share of minds of people who make decisions about your salary, or people at other organizations who could make decisions about your salary or contract income. So while you're working to preserve your revenue or salary as best you can, make sure that you don't limit your growth, the ability to grow market share or mind share. Let me talk to you about that. There's an example about limiting that. So in the tech bust of 2001, Sony dramatically cut marketing. Now think about this. Those of us who are old enough remember having Sony Walkman and then Sony Discman and probably Sony DVD players and Sony everything. Consumer electronics, particularly mobile electronics, they were dominant. But they reacted as they thought responsibly during this bust and cut back on their marketing. And guess what day the iPod launched? It was 5 weeks after the biggest economic disruption in a generation in the U.S. Apple didn't cut back. They went out. They seized the opportunity when there was less competition, lower advertising and a marketing cost, launched the product that turned around their company, and then gave rise to the iPhone, of course, the iPad, and the Apple as we know it today. Another less well-known example I have read about recently is the Smashburger fast casual restaurant. I didn't know this, but they were founded in the middle of that, right at the beginning of that recession of 2008. And I read that the founder thinks that the constraints that that put on them actually are responsible for their success. He said that the cheaper real estate costs allowed them to grow faster than they would have otherwise, or expand faster than they would have otherwise. And that the focus that required was a big payoff. He also benefited from another phenomenon that I'll illustrate with my next example. And that comes from when I was talking to a real estate agent during the real estate bust of 2009. I said, man, this must be terrible. Or, you know, what are you going to do? And he said, yeah, it's really tough. I won't lie. But actually, I see the bright side. Up until now, everyone and their brother and sister and daughter and son was selling real estate. Anyone could sell a house. And it was really difficult for me to get in front of clients and get their attention because there was so much competition. But now all those pretenders are gone. The people who aren't legit aren't going to make it. And on the other side, as I do my best to increase my share of mind, when people are able to get a loan, I'll be the agent that helps them find their house or to sell their house. And he proved prophetic. There was a big winnowing of real estate agents and mortgage lenders, and I remember, and builders and contractors. And I remember thinking, wow, afterwards, you know, anybody who started before 2008, that they were proven by the refiner's fire and that I could trust them as a service provider. And I ended up following or remembering that guy's advice. And I went ahead and launched the Inner Circle in 2009. Don't get me wrong. It didn't grow very fast at all. It barely held on. But what did happen as I was moving forward to increase market share and mind share, there actually were other consultants, coaches, and trainers who helped PR people land more media coverage. Most people don't remember that now because they didn't make it through the recession. But as I was increasing my share of voice, when budgets started coming back, I was there and therefore poised for the dramatic growth that I was blessed with about 2012 that enabled me to cut away from other sort of side gigs and sources of revenue. And then in 2014, after worrying about how I was going to make my mortgage payment in 2009, in 2014, we spent as a family 5 weeks in Europe, you know, 5 years later. Just an example of how things do get better and increasing market share and mind share works. Let's walk through some of the that changes to the way business and culture operates that's going to be permanent, that will have been hastened by these dramatic disruptions. So the first one of those is way more of us are going to be working from home more often. An effect of that is commutes are going to decrease. It's a huge positive. Maybe podcast listenership will decrease. Probably not overall, but the pace of adoption may decrease a little bit. Another area that's going to stay is telemedicine. Up until now, there have been what I think are archaic restrictions and regulations on doctors' ability to see patients virtually. Now, by necessity, we're going to see that ends up working in many cases. There's going to be a ton of ramifications. And if you're in healthcare and you can be on the forefront of this, you can increase market share or mind share or thought leadership and be ready to seize that when people are not thinking only about one particular virus. One of the outgrowths I predict is you and I are going to be getting seen by doctors who are in the Philippines or in Bangladesh for more routine visits. And increased efficiency is going to dramatically help our healthcare system, I hope. We're going to see increased adoption of remote mental health and emotional therapy. There's going to be, unfortunately, a huge boost in the need for that type of therapy and the delivery mechanism. There'll even be growth in related fields, even life coaching. Another cultural change is homeschooling is going to have a different name because homeschooling's sort of got a negative connotation. No offense to those of you who are onto this before the rest of us, but both in higher ed and elementary school and high school, we're never going to go back to the same sort of herd mentality of education. A lot more parents are going to realize, whoa, homeschooling's way better. And it will be called something like distributed learning. We might only be in classes like half as long and more to do at home. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but there'll be a lot of opportunity in the chaos of education in the coming days and weeks, even years. Another one is the huge growth and demand for online educational content, whether that's for kids or adults. If you are at an issue, if you represent an issue or cause, you've never had a more ripe audience for your cause. If you talk about immigration, you could put together some quick online learning resources right now, and it'll be much more likely that people would be interested in that, whatever your cause may be. It's important to start by being useful. So I was talking with Michaela Crone, who's a PR manager at Duolingo. She's an Inner Circle alumnus. And I asked her, hey, you guys are poised really well for the situation. Have you started pitching Duolingo for roundups to journalists who were talking about how people are spending their time where they're away from work or school. And she said, yeah, but we want to be careful that we don't come off as exploiting people's suffering. So where they're starting is producing a kit for parents and teachers about how kids can use Duolingo for their homeschooling. So start with that, be useful, but then don't hold back about innovating and pushing things out there. And as you can see from this screenshot, you could, even if you don't have any educational content yourself, you can be useful by curating all of that which is out there on your topic and pitching it for roundup ideas. Another biz or cultural change that will be permanent is the even wider use of live video in the place of live events, whether it's webcasting or Facebook Live, whatever. Even my yoga class is now taught via Facebook Live. YouTube viewership must be exploding right now. So how can you adapt to be more useful in the face of increased use of video? You could produce more and better video for yourself or your organization. You could make money coaching or training people how to do better video, and even curating it for journalists or decision makers. What's the video options that are out there? Now I'm just going to show you how I brainstorm opportunities. It's said that during chaos, that out of chaos emerge the next big things. And I don't know that I'm going to be able to come up with one about the void of live sports right now, but that I can apply. But watch the ideas that occurred to me. I saw yesterday ESPN had a long blog post that was a simulation of the NCAA basketball tournament, and I was so starved for sports that I found myself scrolling through it breathlessly, hoping that my team would make it to the next round. It was just a simulation, but I followed it all the way through to the championship game, which miraculously they had my team advancing to. So simulation is one idea. My idea, if I was an agent right now, I'd be working to put together a pay-per-stream one-on-one battle between my athlete and somebody else in his or her cohort. Now, obviously, there'd be no spectators, but this is the business model that boxing and MMA have been using for a long time. But what if we could get Federer's got a he's out with an injury now, but what if we could get Djokovic or Nadal on a court, no spectators, but charge $20 a stream? Tons of people would watch that. And then we go to basketball. What if we could see LeBron versus Kawhi one-on-one, or Steph Curry versus Kyrie one-on-one, or Rudy Gobert versus the coronavirus? Oh, whoops, that's already happened. Okay. And if you're not familiar, there's people are angry about Rudy Gobert for being cavalier before he contracted it. So I'm going to give myself the permission to inject a little humor here at his expense. He's doing fine. Okay, so the question here is, that's just what a non-sports executive came up with, noticing a void in the marketplace and wondering how we could fill it. So what could you do to fill a void affecting your industry? It doesn't have to be as big or far-reaching as this, but just think in your narrow niche, what can't people do right now? And what are some creative or unprecedented ways that you could offer them similar opportunities? Okay, so here are some specific recommendations for you to start applying every day. This first one is going to sound very counterintuitive to you as a PR pro, because if you're like me, you're a news junkie and you love the news. But during times of crisis like this, it's very important for you to limit your news consumption to only twice a day. It's very distracting and depressing right now. You can get all that you need to know about how you, that will affect the value that you're offering to people twice a day. Once a little bit after you get going in the morning, and once maybe in the late afternoon. And even then, don't let yourself surf forever. Be purposeful. Before you sign on, ask yourself, I'm looking only for, did anything dramatic change that will affect what I'm going to do in the next few hours? Once you find the answer to that question, then you move on. Remember, you're going to be watching specifically for the rate of new cases. Avoid getting distracted and depressed. When I was preparing for this webinar, I was getting on Twitter looking for relevant tweets. And I felt like, oh man, there's so much happening. I need to know this. I need to know this and wonder what's happening over here. And then after I was on for 30 or 40 minutes, I'd think, well, I could go back to the New York Times homepage and see what's changed. That's what's called a dopamine loop. Your brain responds favorably to seeking an unpredictable reward. So every time we load a new web page looking for news, it's unpredictable, right? And we're hoping for good news. We see a bad news. It's a dopamine spike, and that keeps us in that loop. You got to pull yourself out of it and add value. Remember, don't sit and wait. Go create. Don't retreat. Reach out. So I'm going to give you two recommendations about how everyone listening to this can reach out, whether you pitch media or you don't pitch media, whether you're in an industry where demand has contracted dramatically or not. So starting today, you resolve to become a thought leader or an expert in a niche that's new for you. That's how you're going to get ahead as revenues, budgets, and salaries start shrinking. Let's say right now you work in B2B software. You probably know something about building thought leadership platforms. And maybe you happen to have several clients that have particularly notable female executives. So you right now start positioning yourself as the expert in building thought leadership platforms for B2B software female executives. See, like being an expert in any one of these things is really hard. But when you start to zero in on where they overlap, you can do that. Okay, another example. Let's say you work at a nonprofit and your mission is to protect rivers and lakes. You don't know anything about online education options, but you can start to learn about them. And there's probably a lot of people who are focusing on that. So you're going to focus on a particular demo within those educational options. And you right now become the world's expert on online education options for elementary school age kids about protecting rivers and lakes. How do you do it? You start creating content about it. Did you notice I skipped the stage of learning? Because if you start creating content about it, it forces you to learn about it. Platform doesn't matter. Start with LinkedIn posts or tweets. Build out to blog posts and videos if you have that inclination. Do not worry about how many or how few people see it. You're not doing this to make a huge impact on and attract a big audience right at first. You're doing it to shape your thinking. And you'll find your voice as you go. As you go, you'll start to attract followers and more mindshare. But at first, don't think about that. At the very least, let's say you create a blog post or a video, you can then email it directly to decision makers when you follow the next recommendation I have for you. And that's provide value to decision makers. By decision makers, I mean journalists, any type of media gatekeeper, bosses or executives at your current employer, bosses or executives at potential employers or potential clients. These are the people who are going to be making decisions that relate directly to your earning power. You need to start every day following this pattern to provide value to them. I made this up for this webinar. I call it the ore pattern. So like you're mining for gold and it's the ore. You observe. You share an observation about their work. This is generally some sort of compliment that's meaningful or substantive. Then you recommend an action that will propel that work forward, whether it's something that benefits you or not, or whether you're involved or not. And then you offer to execute it explain why you're qualified. Here's an example. If you're working in a company internally, and you would send an email to your VP of marketing that would go something like this. You observe. You say, hey, I've seen the weekly updates that you have the marketing team emailing customers. It's definitely a great way to keep them close to us through this crisis. Video has proven to strengthen relationships beyond the written word and is preferred to prose by 55% of the general public. Have you considered using a video component for the weekly updates? So right there, it's useful. To them, whether they take you up on this next offer to execute or not. But then you offer to execute. I'd be happy to take that on. I can set up a simple studio. I'll rewrite it, choose a rotating group of spokespeople, and then I'll edit the video right into the weekly email. It'll only require about 20 minutes of the spokesperson's time. I'll take care of the rest. It's imperative right now, whenever we propose something new or different, that we emphasize how turnkey, efficient, how this will not take more time or resources because those are at such a premium. And then your request, would you like me to proceed for this week's message and see how it goes? So positioning it as an experiment rather than a permanent shift makes it easier to swallow at first. Okay. Another example, if you're coming externally, if you're at an agency or you work for yourself, this comes after you see a software company, somebody on their teams posted about how the increased interest in their educational content. And they posted that on LinkedIn. So you'd send a direct message via LinkedIn that would start with an observation. And then your recommendation is, hey, that's a great fit for the roundups that journalists and bloggers will be putting together, but there'll be a lot of competition. Do you have anyone who's reaching out to media to secure mind share during this land grab? So right there, this is valuable because they aren't even thinking about this, about journalists doing roundups, let alone the fact that right now is the time to act. So if they weren't and they have somebody who could do it, they could do it. And you were you provided value. But if they don't, you're going to certainly not be bashful about making yourself available. Remember, you want to emphasize how turnkey this is. I can get started immediately after a 15-minute phone call. So definitely set a goal to do this daily. It gives you a purpose and a creative outlet. It's going to get you in front of the right people, whether they accept your recommendations or not. It's a useful, not only non-annoying, but helpful way to be seen by crucial individuals. And hey, you may even succeed. You could, your current employer could adopt your proposal and then you'll have established greater value to them. You could win freelancer contract business or position yourself for a new job. So remember, observe, recommend, and then execute. I'm doing this myself. My entire purpose is now shifting to helping PR pros succeed through this recession. Here's how I'm going to help you do that, and here are your next steps if you're an Inner Circle member, and then I'll tell you your next steps if you're one of everyone else. For Inner Circle members, our next Ask Michael Anything's March 31st. I know you're going to have a ton of new questions, and I'll be ready to answer them. And then in our next masterclass in April will be with a former PR pro who's now in the C-suite of a publicly traded company. And she's going to walk us through what we need to do to prove our value to executives through this crisis, to hold on to our jobs and or be able to secure business if we're external. Then watch for some new developments in our Inner Circle forum. At times like this, it's more vital than ever to ramp up our sense of community. I've already had people reaching out and talking about how comfortable they feel with the support of their Inner Circle family. And then watch for more innovations and extras coming. I'm committed to adding even more value to the Inner Circle than ever before. And if you're not in the Inner Circle, that's okay. I've got a big innovation coming out in a few weeks that's going to be free to everyone. I've been working on it night and day. I obviously do a lot of public speaking, so that part of my business has dramatically contracted. But fortunately, this big innovation is not related to that, and I'm excited to be able to release that at a time when so many of you can benefit it. So watch your Thursday email for details. If you don't already get my Thursday email, I'll tell you how in just a moment. And then in those emails, you're going to see lots more value coming regularly. I'm increasing the value of my paid offerings. I'm also increasing the value of my free offerings because what do I want to do? I want to reach out. I want to demonstrate my value to you. And so that when those budgets do emerge, I'll be there and you'll know that the value of what I have to offer. So if you would like to get more info on the Inner Circle and get some bonuses that are going to help you succeed through the recession, you do that by typing into your browser, michaelsmartpr.com, /inner-circle. And you're going to see this join the waitlist button. The Inner Circle is now the place where PR pros are going to help each other get through the economic turmoil. I look forward to seeing my Inner Circle members back inside. And then those of you who aren't, if you join the wait list, we'll let you know when we're accepting new members. In closing, I want to leave you with advice on staying grounded that came from the late, great Mr. Rogers. My family and I was seeking some uplifting entertainment this past weekend, and we watched Won't You Be My Neighbor? And during the movie, the journalist asks Mr. Rogers' wife, Joanne, what it's like to be married to a living saint. She says, I don't much care for that term. And he says, what does he do to stay grounded? And this was her answer. So this is what the real life Mr. Rogers did to stay grounded. He reads scripture, swims laps, prays for people by name, and writes letters, hundreds of them. He didn't just start doing that when he was famous. He's been doing that since I met him. And so I leave that with you, everybody, to start every day reading some timeless wisdom literature from the tradition that brings you comfort, exercise, and whether you believe in prayer or not, think about individuals by name and send out positive vibes and energy to them, and then reach out. Don't retreat. Help your neighbors. Serve others. A couple great examples that I've seen in my life. My parents live with my two brothers with Down syndrome in an apartment complex for retirees. So basically everyone in there is 70 or older. And some people in their neighborhood came together and started up their own little organization with the name of their apartment in it, where they volunteer to go run errands for them so they don't have to leave and put themselves at risk in the community. It's not a city function, it's just neighbors. In my own neighborhood, there's an 80-year-old man and his church suspended services. He lives by himself. And a family in our neighborhood stood on his sidewalk and sang a church hymn to him on Sunday morning to give him a sense of community. And it was so sweet in the photo. He's wearing a white shirt and tie that he was still trying to feel a part of that church community. Yet another example, lots of young parents are tearing their hair out with their little kids. I got four kids myself that are about 8 years apart. I remember how tough that time period was when we could send them to school. And so just getting on and doing a FaceTime with their kids, you could even read them a story to give the parents a break. These are all outlets that will feed your soul, help you be less distracted and depressed and discouraged by the crisis, and help you stay grounded. I wish you all the success in the world, and certainly wish you all the best in enduring this crisis well. I look forward to helping you however I can. Thank you so much for sharing your precious time and attention with me. And I look forward to being in touch further. Bye-bye.